And there's definitely a segment here in Chicago that, as far as they're concerned, and it's very interesting to kind of hear some of the background, because I haven't talked to any of those people, but it's the worst fucking thing that I have come back. They think
I'm fucking Galactus.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm fucking Thanos, and this is bad, right?
I'm Don Hall.
And I'm David Himmel.
And this is the Literate ApeCast.
Uses bad words. If you don't like bad words, maybe you shouldn't listen to it.
So, it's been 3 weeks.
Let me just say, before we get into the 3 weeks that you've been here, because it's been about 3 minutes since I just finished the breakfast you made for me. That was fucking delicious.
Well, thank you.
So, thank you for feeding me.
Yeah.
And nice job. Like, not that I'm surprised, like, oh, this idiot, you know, yeah. Like, because I know you're getting really into cooking and you're, you know, reading the salt, fat, acid, heat, the Samin Norsrat?
Norsrat,
sorry. But yeah, like, that was really, really good.
Outstanding. For the listeners, what I made for him was some pesto scrambled eggs, couple slices of crisp bacon, some fresh basil on a piece of French bread with a little butter and some Dijon mustard.
So good.
And it was tasty. I liked it.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is just the beginning. Just the beginning.
But this is a new thing. Like, this is the Chicago thing. Like, yeah. Like, you're here in Chicago. You've got, like, this is the new Don
it's
Hall.
My
like,
new art. It's my new storytelling theater / whatever. It's the thing that I'm going to do that I like. It's new. It's invigorating. It's exciting. It is a way of, like, you could argue that theater and storytelling is sort of like feeding people something, but this is like literally feeding people.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, it is different in that, or maybe similar. I can't decide. What I like is, I like my cooking. When I cook something good, I like to eat.
You were happy with it.
I was very happy with it, but it makes it even better that you really liked it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, okay, because I can't decide which one is more meaningful to me, but I also know, you know, I always believe there's two kinds of people. The people that bake a cake and it's not a good cake unless everybody else likes it.
Yeah.
Or the people who bake a cake and they like it, they don't give a shit if anybody liked it. I think there's a third where you bake a cake, you like your cake. But it's so much more fun when other people like it, too.
Yeah, it's like sex.
Yeah, it is.
Like, sex is great if I bust my nut.
Yeah.
But it's even better if we both do.
If she calls you daddy.
Even better that way.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. That's the cherry on top.
So, well, thank you. Thank
There's
you
no cherries
for the food shout out. I'm actually having a ton of fun finding recipes. What I like about this salt fat.
Is this a ton of fun, your nickname in high school?
What?
Wasn't ton of fun, your nickname in high school?
No, actually, you want to know what my nickname in high school was?
Dick?
No. Don R.
Don R?
Because when I know it's the stupidest thing, is Nelson Warren, who was my speech coach, debate coach, theater director, he was that guy. I came in and I used to sign my name, Don R. Hall.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other guys in the class that I just really, he and I just got, we became fast friends for all 4 years of high school was Don Mercer.
Mm-hmm.
And Nelson Warren decided that Don Mercer was Don and I was Don R.
Okay.
And I mean, I was known as Don R all through high school.
That's funny.
Yeah. 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 That was my nickname, I tried in eighth grade to give myself a nickname and it was the worst nickname of all time.
God, what was it?
Don Wad.
I'm sorry. Okay.
I know.
I heard two things. My brain is having trouble processing which one is actually what actually I heard. What I think I heard was Don Wad.
That's correct.
What I wanted to hear was Don Juan.
Oh.
Which would have been a better name.
But way better.
Really pathetic. It's pretty,
oh, so eighth
but
grade.
Don Wad?
Here's where that came from was, again, up until eighth grade, I went to a different school every year. I was the new kid, first grade, second grade, third grade. I mean, we moved around a lot. And so by eighth grade, I'm a fully formed pain in the ass. I am a complete anti-authoritarian dickweed. I've figured out the game of being the new kid, and the attention that I craved was mostly because I would just defy authority in every way, mm-hmm. right? And so by the time I got in eighth grade, and I'm going to eighth grade in Benton, Kansas.
Okay.
Which is just the smallest fucking one.
Where is that in relation to Wichita?
It's about 20 minutes outside of Wichita.
Okay.
But it's a burg. I mean, it's so tiny. It's, yeah. I mean, it's the kind of town that has one convenience store and that's it.
Cute.
You know, I don't even know what the population is, but it can't be more than 500. And that was where I went.
Benton,
Kansas.
We're going to look it up. Keep talking.
There you go. But no, I ended up in shop class, kind of bonding with a kid named Curtis. I can't remember his last name. But Curtis, two things that Curtis did was he would constantly go meow 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 meow. I don't know. He was like, you know, basically the only friends that I had when I was growing up were retards because nobody else would hang out with me. There's a meow meow meow, and I, you know, but he would also put the word wad at the ends of things. It was just one of the things he did. Is like, you know, it's like, hey, I gotta get my homework wad. I mean, it was just his thing.
That's funny.
And one day he called me Don Wad. And so I just decided that was going to be my nickname. And I tried to proliferate it.
Yeah.
It didn't catch.
No,
that's
a good thing.
He was the only one that called me Don Wad. Yeah. I think Don R was a far better nickname.
Don R is better.
Not as cool as like Slick MacGuffin or something like that. But hey, you know, whatever.
943 people.
There you go.
As of the 2020 census.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I said, it's just a burr. It's not even a blip. It's an island in the middle of nowhere.
Still smaller than where my kids, grandparents
live. That's smaller. That's smaller than the middle school I taught at in Chicago.
Well, where? How do I refer to? I guess I just say my soon to be ex wife's. I don't know how to.
Your ex in laws.
That hurts me.
But it's true.
I know. I don't want. I need to find a nicer way of because I don't like.
You know what? You know what, Dana's? Because I'm still in contact once in a while. Not as much as it used to be, but I'm still in contact with Dana's mom, and we know what we call each other.
Yeah.
She's my outlaw.
Oh, that's funny.
So that was the term she came up with, and I went, okay, yeah, so there's my outlaws.
Okay.
Your outlaw.
I'm gonna take it.
Yeah, it's fun. It doesn't feel so painful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where my outlaws live in Hammond, Illinois, it's a ton of 504.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I mean, they don't even have a convenience store. You have to go to the town over
to get a
convenience store.
Yeah. To get well, Slurpee and cigarettes.
They used to have like Yakeley's was there, but Yakeley's done that. We're talking about Chicago. We're not talking about Hammond, Illinois.
All right, so I have been in Chicago.
Which has many convenience stores.
Yes. Way too many. I am a repatriated Chicagoan now. And it's been, like I said, there were a couple of things that I didn't expect.
Okay.
One was that, you know, I spent a year and a half in Wichita, and two things that I can now say, oh, wow. And sort of that, like, I just had my life blow up and I feel like I want to die any day. You know, it's like, I was in that place.
Yeah.
You know, so now I'm going to just kind of heal with my family in Wichita. Two things that I actually could look back and go, oh, okay. One was I was pretty much surrounded with people I trust unconditionally. I mean, I really mostly hung out with my family. I didn't really make any friends in Wichita. I mean, I worked with people, but for the most part, the people I spent most of my time with, when I was spending time with people, because most of my time was spent completely solitary.
Yes.
But when I did, it was with people that I trusted completely. And that's different now.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are just a handful of people who I trust. And they've got lives. They got stuff to do. They're not like, hey, come over anytime. You know, it's all right. So everybody's got their shit. But I'm also running into people that I, you know, I guess I'd say I used to know, and recognizing that I am a very trusting person and I cannot afford to be that person anymore.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that I don't trust people. I just have to be, I'm a firm believer that trust is given, not earned.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be a bit more, focused on who I give that trust to. And so there are a couple of people that I thought I trusted 5 years ago that I've run into now. And I go, okay. Mm-hmm. No ill will.
Yeah.
But I already know just from a couple of conversations, that's someone I cannot trust.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to put them, you know, I'm going to put a little stiff arm. I'll be kind. I'm going to try to be gracious as I can be.
Would you still consider these people friends?
I will consider that. And that's the thing.
There's levels of trust.
I don't know if you and I have ever had this conversation. And this is where Don R is a big dick. Is that, and I've had people really get upset about this, is to call someone my friend, that's big to me. It is not, and there's a reason I don't have a lot of friends, and maybe it's because I grew up as a new kid.
I would say that you have a lot of friends.
Well, no, I would say I have a lot of people who are friendly, and I have a lot of acquaintances, but I can count on one hand the number of people I consider my friends.
Okay.
Because friend means if you call me and say you need my kidney, you're going to get it. I don't know why anybody would want my fucking kidney. However,
any port in a storm.
Yeah. It was like a joke. This was a roast at Straw Dog that they did on me back in the day. And Joe's joke was, Don's the kind of guy that would give you the shirt off his back, whether you needed a shirt or not, whether it fit you, or if you didn't mind that it was covered in smoke smell. And it was like, but that's the thing, is for my friends, I'll go all the way.
Yeah.
For my acquaintances, I'm not going to do that. And for people that I'm friendly. So yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that I've really noticed is I kind of got used to relative anonymity. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I said Don Hall, they thought of a dead DJ.
Yeah.
You know, and so most people didn't give a shit, other than my family, didn't give a shit who I was, where I lived. I could walk down the street. I could go to any place. Nobody knew who I was. Nobody cared who I was. Yeah. I was just another of the nameless, faceless.
And white men.
Yeah, right. And I noticed this when I came to Chicago a year ago, when I came and just crashed on your couch. What I really noticed, and I hadn't seen that in a long time, was you get on the L, you can see the difference between people who want to be seen and people who are desperate not to be.
Yeah.
I mean, you just in the room, you just in that car, you can see that. And I don't know if I'm either right now. I don't think I'm someone who wants to be seen. I don't think I want to be completely invisible, but I'm not as comfortable with the fact that, there are people here that know me, and there is a reputation that I will argue that for some people maybe has been earned, and a reputation that for some people has not been earned.
Yeah.
But I'm no longer clean slate. As much as it feels like I'm coming to Chicago and I'm kind of starting over, I'm not really, because there are plenty, like a lot of people that have an opinion of me that is 5 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, I think while I sound the same, I'm a lot different than five years. Like, it's like I said last night, is like, being so overwhelmingly humiliated by life and being proven so ridiculously wrong to a point where there was a period of about 5 months where I wouldn't have given a shit if I got hit by a fucking bus. I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was looking to get hit by a bus, but if one hit me, I'd probably just sigh with relief. I mean, that was kind of where I was at. That does have...
God, I've been there so many times.
That has an effect on you, and it's the first time that I've had that happen to me. I've had a lot of bad things happen in my life, but usually I just bounce right back. Yeah.
This was tough. This was
bounced back from some of that. I mean, I've bounced back in different
ways. You have these... I don't even know what to call it. But it was right before Literate Ape started.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck that was with the moth and that whole thing. Like, we need a name for that event.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's so funny you say that, because there were really two things that happened that, like, in terms of pragmatic, right? And beyond why, two things that happened. I left WBEZ and then I left the moth. And those were two big things that were happening in 2017. That was kind of what, and they happened within a couple of months of each other.
Was BEZ, I guess that was early on.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I worked at BEZ. Yeah. I left March. This put it this way.
Right.
I left BEZ March of 2017. I left the Moth July of 2017.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah.
After. Okay.
Yeah. And
those two things, like, those are like big traumatic moments.
Well, the thing is, they weren't that traumatic, but
they took you down a peg or two. And I when we started Littered Ape, like,
yeah,
you were still going through.
It was a loss of massive status.
Yeah, you were going through that.
But it was talking to people here now, and I've asked this question a couple of times from a couple of people just to hear. I'm not trying to correct the record. I just want to know, again, that reputation, that opinion. It's like, so, you know, like I was talking to Ada Chang. I said, so what do you recall? I'm just curious. And if you don't have a recollection of it, that's fine. I don't really care.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious. What is your recollection of my leaving WBEZ and then shortly thereafter leaving them off? And she had a very defined, here's what I remember happening.
Yeah.
And what was fascinating about it was she was completely wrong. I mean, she wasn't even close. She wasn't close. I've asked a couple of people in the 3 weeks, what are your perceptions of that? Everybody has gotten it completely wrong. And I mean, I know that they're wrong because I was there. It happened to me. So I know exactly what happened.
Everybody's truth is different.
But it's really fascinating. And again, I don't give a shit about correcting the record. What's interesting, because March has been my research month, is like, all right, seeing what Chicago is. And it's not like I need to find a way to fit in. That is, have you ever been to a high school reunion?
No.
Okay, I went to my 10-year high school reunion.
I'm not sure I was invited to my high school
reunion. I was invited. I never went back. I've never gone to another one. But when I went to the 10, and this is why, by the time it was 1994, I had been in Chicago for about 5 years. I was married. I had a theater company. You know, at that point, I had a theater company. You know, it's like, so I'm doing improv comedy in Chicago. You know, I mean, I'm coming back to Towanda, Kansas, which is just down the street from Benton, Kansas. So it ain't much bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really not much bigger, but that's where I went to high school.
It's the right size for Don R.
Yeah, for Don R, yes. But I went to it, and what was fascinating was I was a different person. I mean, I was the same person, but I'd grown.
Yeah.
But as
10 years older, you had 10 years of life outside of being a child in high school.
Yeah. As soon as I encountered these people from high school, our behavior, it's like we went back in time because we didn't know how to behave around each other than the way we had behaved in high school.
But I'll tell you, there's a benefit to that because, like, when I get together with, like, my old camp buddies that I was 11 years old or 17 years old with.
Yeah, I think it's comparable.
But we've also stayed in touch regularly, routinely throughout those years. But whenever we're together, there's still kind of like the default of, we're not 45 years old right now. We're 21 again, but with responsibility and a little
wisdom. We're 11, like, with hair on our balls. I get it.
Like going back to, like, oh, hey, haven't seen you in 10 years. Like, of course you're going to default to what you were 10 years ago because you know nothing about this person.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you do the bullshit of, like, so what are you up to? I have a job. Me too.
It's a similar, which is why I didn't want to go back because I don't like that feeling. I didn't like the feeling that I had progressed and somehow I regressed in like 10 seconds. So I was like, all right, that's not something I'm terribly interested in experiencing. I'm experiencing something, not exactly, but similar to that in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't experience with you because you and I have been literally, we've been doing a podcast almost every single week for 7 years. So all the time, you know, it's like we've been constantly in contact. I talk to you as much as I talk to my mom, you know what I mean? And so that was a big deal. But seeing people who I have not been in contact with in 5 years, and things have happened to them, and they have done things, and I have done things that are separate, and I feel that gravity of, like, just behave the way you used to. And I caught myself early on, like, really amping up, like, really trying hard to impress, and I'm back, and it's me, same old me. And I really caught myself performing. And then one night I came home and I went, what the fuck is that?
Well, but there's also nothing necessarily wrong with that, because if that's still a part of you, you still have a level of performance, Don,
always,
in you, you know.
Always, yeah.
So, you know, don't.
Well, to me, I think
let it ride.
Well, the reason I don't want to let it ride, I'm going to be easy on it. And if it happens, it happens. And I get all.
The mistake would be like, I'm going to
And that's the difference. You know, that's the difference.
Replant my flag it was again. I will make the moth mine again.
It's the intent. To me, it really is like, you know, we talk about impact versus intent. I'm always going to fall on the side that intent is most important. And I think the intent of, hey, now I'm working the mat. I'm doing my stand up. I'm charming you. Yeah. I'm doing my thing. If the intent is to establish that I have not changed, and that I'm the same guy they remember, and I'm fucking back, that's a bad intent.
Oh, what you need to be is you're better than the guy who was. You're still charming. Yeah. You're still funny. You're still all those things.
Yeah, but.
But I'm older. You're a better version of it.
I think so. I definitely, humility.
You know, a comeback. Humility is only a comeback when you're better.
Yeah. Humility is not something I ever would say was something I sought. And I don't think I will ever seek humility.
Yeah.
But having life really, and not just life, but just having things. You make a big gamble, and let's put it, and that's what I love about the whole Vegas thing. It says, I'm going to marry you, and I'm going to ask you to marry me on the third date. We're going to do this. This is the fairy tale. All that was a fucking dice roll.
Yeah.
Going to Vegas was a big dice roll.
This is a really...
And I lost...
fucking nose.
And I lost everything with this gamble.
Yeah.
And that is a humbling experience to know that my instincts could be so fucking wrong that I completely fucked my life up. And... that's okay. You know, that's a humility, but yeah, that has changed how I look that day. And I was telling them, it was very funny because I went to Diane Castile's show and I bought a ticket for, it was like a premium ticket. And I thought it's $37. However, I thought, you know what? When she came, she bought two copies of my book, bought your book.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fucking cheap out. I'm going to, you know, I'm just going to buy a ticket. Well, it was, and I still don't understand how it is, but it was like at a table with four other people.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to buy four seats, right? And just so I can have my table by myself.
That's a big dick energy.
That's big dick energy, but I'm not going to do that shit because that's stupid and I don't have that much fucking money, which, by the way, Chicago's really expensive. And everybody and their fucking dog wanting to have lunch with me and dinner with me I've been burning fucking money like I'm a fucking wealthy motherfucker and I got to stop. It's like, whoa, because to go and have lunch at a pizza place and you're with two people and it's an $80 bill for lunch. Fuck off. It's crazy. Yeah. So yeah, no, I'm coming down.
It's that iced tea tax.
So I sat down and it was these three retired women who all seemed far younger than retired women should be, but it's Arlington Heights. So maybe that's when they retire, you know, whatever.
And like maybe, what they were, what, like 36?
I didn't ask, but they just all seemed much younger than they all said they were retired. And I was like, none of you look old enough to be retired.
But did they seem like 36 years old or like 56?
They seemed like they were in their 50s. Yeah. They were. Yeah. It wasn't like they were young.
I mean, it's probably.
Yeah.
Were they married?
I didn't ask.
Okay.
That's the thing.
Did they have rings on their fingers?
I didn't look. I'm not,
Jesus, you are.
I don't
completely
care.
I
do not care about this. I'm not looking to get laid. But what was fascinating was, I'm sitting down and I'm trying to kind of. I'm not. You know, they're on their night. That's their night. They're three friends. I'm this fucking. Who's this motherfucker? Bought a ticket. Now we have to sit with him.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to eavesdrop on their conversation. I'm not trying to inject myself. I'm literally just give me a beer. I'm here. I'm on the corner so I can watch the show. Diane asked me to take pictures. All good. And at one point, when it was apparent that I was not going to be the guy they thought that might be, he's like, hey, they kind of asked, you know, like one of them asked me a couple questions. And so she was like, are you one of the storytellers? I said, no, not tonight. She said, but you've told stories here before. I said, well, long, long time ago. She went, wait a minute. Did you always have a goatee? And I said, no, sometimes I go. And she goes, I knew it. You're the guy. I went, where does this come from? She goes, Diane used to send out, when she sent out her newsletter, there was a picture of a guy with his arms out telling stories. It was you, wasn't it?
There you go.
I said, yes, that's the Story Eagle show. And I asked her a couple of years. She did that for a couple of years. Like, you know, you could find another picture. I'm no longer in Chicago. She goes, oh, so you used to do this. I said, yeah. She said, so why'd you stop? Now we're in the thick of this. And I'm not going to get in. It's like, I don't want to tell these strange women about my weird divorce.
Bring them down. They're out to have a good
night. Well, here's the thing.
Gals night.
Here's how it happens. Fucking fascinating. Where it's like, I went to Vegas. My wife and I went to Vegas. We got divorced. And then I always say, you know, because Vegas. And everybody seems to get that. It's like,
that's not fair to Vegas.
Well, no, everybody gets divorced in Vegas. Come on. That's Vegas.
I don't like that.
Well, okay. I know it's because you've got an affinity for Vegas. I get it. I love Vegas, but yeah, it's Vegas. I mean, you got to remember the entire
Chinatown,
the entire existence of dude ranches. The side of dude ranches was because people couldn't get divorced unless they were living there for 6 weeks. That's why dude ranches exist. Look it up.
Wait, what?
That's in my casino book, man. You didn't read my casino book. The dude ranch in Las Vegas was designed because Las Vegas made it much easier to get divorced. So what you had to do is you and your wife had to go move to one of these dude ranches and stay there as a resident for 6 weeks, and then you could get a 3-day divorce. That was why they existed. So it is the divorce capital of the world because of that. So I don't think it's too unfair to Vegas.
Okay.
However, so I said, yeah. So Vegas says, oh, what'd you do in Vegas? I said, well, so now here's an opportunity to put, they're all three in a book club. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to plug my book.
Yeah.
I said, well, I was a casino manager at the shittiest casino in all of Las Vegas. I wrote a book about it called Casino at the End of the World. And so while we're talking, one of them looks up on her phone and she finds on my Amazon page, Casino at the End of the World. She goes, oh, I found your book. And then she sees the other book.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, whoa.
Belief is a sledgehammer?
No.
Belief is a bulldozer.
I didn't, man, you know what I mean. And she goes, what is this book? So all three of them were looking it up.
Did you just go like, God damn
it.
You said, buy it.
Yeah, I was like, well, what I said was, yeah, okay. Yeah. I wrote that book too. And one of them, I didn't remember what her name was. She said, is that literal? I said, that is not a euphemism. That is the literal sex for cash, 2.5 years. Yes. And so now they have, so while they're getting, I'm not eating. I already ate. So they're getting their charcuterie board and their fucking entrees. They're just nibbling. They are just, they want to know. They want to know the tea.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is so not why I'm here. This is, okay, I'll tell you the story. But I felt like I traumatized. I mean, I know for a fact that all three of them bought the book. And apparently I told them, I said, if you use my book at book club and everybody's got to read my book, I'll come in and talk. Oh, they love that idea.
You're doing better than I am. I said in my post-it notes that I'm dating. It's not as much to find love as it is to sell books, because I, you know, meet these new girls and they're like, so you're an author? Like, what is you, you know? And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I've written 3 books. Like, oh my God, they sound so interesting. I have to check them out. And I don't push like, you know, here, go buy it right now. I just kind of let it be.
Well, see, this is why you're not selling books. Well, the reason you're not selling books is because your point of having the conversation is to get laid. So you don't talk about the book. I'm not looking to get, I don't even notice they have wedding rings. Bring up my book, I am going to tell them about the book. I'm not trying to get them in bed. And trust me, hey, I married a prostitute, my life was turned to shit, is not a big come on line. Most women are not going to go, oh, well, then I want to take you home right now, you fucking broken piece of shit.
I have had a girl say to me, I know you're going through divorce, you look like you could get laid.
You
and
know,
it was just this, I don't know, it was a pity fuck. But
yeah, the thing is, and
if I explain my books to them, they're not going to want to
see me. And here's the thing. Any woman that approaches me that way, I know is exactly like Dana. And I don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah.
Because it's sex as a transaction. It's sex as a simple act. It's a physical act. I've done that. So I know if I have a hot chick, or even not a hot chick, just says, hey.
Were these three women, would you consider them attractive, or did that not even register with you?
Two of them I would have fucked.
Well, that's not saying, I mean.
I mean, they were, you know, they were attractive. They were
Arlington Heights, like a Arlington Heights 10?
Oh, they were
Chicago 5 or like,
what? Oh, wow. I hadn't even thought of it that way. I would say they were in Arlington Heights 8.
Okay.
Two of them were.
Okay.
Which makes them a Chicago 3.
Okay.
This is the thing. And that's what that is the true test of whether
Heights 8 is a
show. Just one of them looks at me. But anyway, one of them looks at me. I think her name is Claire, but she looks at me and she goes, "So you don't trust women at all, do you?"
Mm.
And I said, "No, I do trust women. I don't trust women who are interested in me."
Well, because there's got to be something wrong with them.
Goddamn right. And that's what I said. I said, I don't trust women who are interested in me. And she laughed.
It's Groucho Marx, man.
She really laughed because it's like, and then I followed it up with, and I also don't trust women that I'm interested in. Because that's going to be bad for me too. So I'm kind of in a, it's not like women in general I don't trust. It's like, yeah, if there's no romantic thing, like, if there's no romantic thing, then I trust you implicitly. I will determine whether I give you trust, but that door is open. That door is available.
Yeah.
But if I want to fuck you or you want to fuck me, that door is something's locked wrong. With 7 locks, like a fucking shut in. I'm like, nope.
This is something I have to work on as I move forward is just like the, I guess it's connected to trust. But like, I will say, like, I'm a catch. Why doesn't the girl that I like me? It's not happening right now. You know, like I'm decent looking. I'm charming. I'm not a total bumbling.
You're well read.
I'm kind of smart. Yeah. I'm smart enough, whatever. But then when they like me,
you don't
it's
like her. What's wrong with you?
What do you like me? What do you like about me? What is it that you, how do you think I'm so adorable and smart? Like, I'm fucking stupid. Like, I didn't read Catcher in the Rye till my 30s. And it's stupid. It's a dumb book. Read it when you're a teenager.
It's kind of,
when you grow up.
Well, it's sort of like reading The Fountainhead when you're in your 30s.
Yeah.
You go, oh, if I read this when I was 19, it might have changed my life. But now it's like, you're a fucking loon and also not a great writer.
But there's also like, the trust, I got some really bad advice when I was a sophomore in college. From an older friend, he told me once, we were talking about this girl that I liked, and I was like, you know, how do I get her? You know,
that's the game, yeah.
And he told me that he said, always have the answers.
Boy, that's terrible advice.
Terrible advice.
That's the worst advice.
Now, for 19-year-old David,
that's
great advice.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I can do that. I always have a pen. Does she ever need a pen? I've got a pen. I've got fucking Advil in my backpack. If she has a headache, I can, I always, and I've kind of carried that through. Like, if somebody needs something, I'm a problem solver. Well, what do you need? Like, I will get it for you. We will make it happen.
You know where that goes.
But this has ruined trust because now I can't be vulnerable.
Well, you can't.
Because if I don't have the answers, I'm a failure.
Well, and what I think is interesting about that point is one of the things, going back to like the people who used to know me, right? Yeah. And there's definitely a segment here in Chicago that as far as they're concerned, and it's very interesting to kind of hear some of the background, because I haven't talked to any of those people, but it's the worst fucking thing that I have come back. I'm fucking Thanos and this is bad, right? But the interesting thing is,
here's the thing. I want to address them directly.
All right. Well, let me, because I want to connect it to what you just said, and then you can address them directly. Because one of the things that I recognize, and I can tell you every name, and I can tell you every reason, I know exactly why I'm an evil person. And the reason I'm an evil person is because all of them were people that worked with me, that I was the guy that
Beezy.
Or WNEP or wherever, you know, that I had some sort of like work relationship, a collaboration with.
I don't know. You're allowed to have hate in your heart if you work at public radio,
you know, but all these people were in a situation and I had made myself. That's kind of I'm the guy that solves the problem. I'm the guy that goes out of his way to pick up your shit. I'm the guy that makes sure that if you need a cup of coffee, I'm going to go out of my way to get it. That was just kind of who I was. Well, every one of these people, and it's not about a cup of coffee, but what happened almost inevitably is when there was something they wanted or needed, and I could not provide that,
yeah,
I became the enemy.
Because you conditioned them.
Because I conditioned them to accept that I would always have, I could always
be. That is some bullshit right there. And, that is some fucking.
But it goes to the heart of what you just said about women. It's like, if it's always
bullshit.
Yeah. If you always have the pin, if you always have the thing, you just taught that person to know that you're always there. And when you aren't, when you, for whatever reason it is, when you cannot, it is reflection on your lack of commitment to them.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. But I also recognize again in my 5 years of solitude, I've recognized there are certain things that my inclination is to do them, is to go out of my way to either help my friends or just be cool or whatever. And even if it's something I do not want to do. And I'm really resisting that urge, because that's a natural urge for me. And I did that with my family. It's like anything they needed, come over in the middle of the night and change the light bulb. Done. That's why I'm there. That was why I was in Wichita in part, was to help my family do anything they needed. But I can't be that person in Chicago, because there are too many people who will need things if they know that I will do them. So I'm having to really set some boundaries on, okay, I'm not doing that. And I'm not doing that not out of like, oh, fuck that person, but I'm not doing that because I don't want to do that thing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to chill out. And so I'm being very intentional about what I see. It's like going out to what I spend is like, it's like one friend was like, hey, you want to have dinner with my wife and I? And I was like, God damn it, I can't spend all this fucking money. And I'm not going to say, oh yeah, only if you pay, because that's bullshit. So I said, yeah, as long as we can have it at your house, I'll cook something and bring it. He was thrilled. He was like, oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. Thank you, because I can make a really decent meal, pack it in some fucking Tupperware, and bring it over to heat it up at their house. For $20,
as opposed to the price.
Yeah, and so it's like, I gotta, but also, I'm doing something that I want to do versus just saying, you know what, I'll just do this thing because I don't want to disappoint them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it. It's like the one time you don't show up, that person gets mad at you, but that's on them.
Well, it is on them, but I train them to expect. And I don't blame
us have the answers.
I can't blame anybody. I mean, the thing is, anybody that thinks I'm an evil person, it has really, so really gone off the fucking.
This is what I want to address the listeners who aren't listening to this. hey, idiots, Don's not that big of a deal. He's not that important or impactful in your world.
Or anybody's.
And the fact that you've carried this shit around with you for 5+ years is just dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
So with all due respect, moron, knock it the fuck off. Get on with your life. He doesn't care. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Get a fucking hobby. Well, read a book.
It's one of the things I told you the other day. We were having a conversation about why you're dating, and part of it is because it feels good for your ego and that kind of stuff. And one of the things that I said, and I don't know how you took this, but it's a thing again, and we've talked about this, that I have what I'm calling the miserable currency of experience.
Yeah.
I've been divorced 3 times.
Currency of miserable experience?
No, the miserable currency of experience.
Okay, got it.
Is that I've had increasingly worse divorces.
Yeah.
And I've also had a bit more life than you. And I would argue that I've done far more stupid things than you, which is a challenge, because I want to see some more stupid shit.
I don't know.
You're not meeting the challenge. You got to do some more stupid shit. We'll
have
to
take time on this, like think it out and like have a.
We got a plan.
Us comparing scars.
Stupid decisions stupid that you shit, make, because I've made so many. But anyway, but one of the things I said was, and it did, it took me, and it was something that I realized when I left Chicago, but was really emphasized in both Vegas and Kansas, that I'm really going to hold on to, which is my own lack of importance.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've probably recently felt some of that. It's like, you know, you left August Jackson, they didn't have a fucking party for you. No. You know, it's like, you're gone. You're just a disposable cog. They're going to find somebody else just like you to do your job. And that feels shitty to know that you are effectively a disposable part in the world.
Which I've known. Like,
it's one thing to know it, and it's another thing to really own it.
It still feels bad. Yeah.
It no longer makes me feel bad. It did for a number of years, really made me feel bad that ultimately nobody gives a fuck. It's a handful of people. And what I realized was, oh, the reason it hurts is because I want more than that handful of people to care.
Yeah.
And none of them do.
Yeah.
So why am I focusing on the billions of prodigal sons rather than the people that I have right here that love me and do care?
Yeah.
So focus on the people that care rather than all of the masses that can give a shit that you exist.
I think your goal for Chicago, for Don R. Part 2.
Is cook some good food.
But it's also... I think I have to do this to a degree as well. So maybe we can do it together. We can hold hands and Thelma Louise this shit off the
cliff. I love it.
Thelma Louise
and a Prius. Boy, that really just...
Jesus Christ.
It really doesn't work.
Somehow that movie just became more feminine.
It's a red, but it's a red Prius. Yeah,
all right. Come on. Jesus Christ. I think it's the idea of give ourselves a little more grace, not be so rigid in who we have to be for our performative bullshit that we both have, even though we don't, we're still pretty fucking performative in how unperformative we are.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate,
I'm a nonconformist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, look at how long it took me to make my hair so perfectly disheveled. Like, I don't give a fuck. 7 hours.
Yeah. There you go.
7 hours.
I just wear a ball cap now. So I really don't care. But
which ball cap are you going to wear today? Because I noticed you're wearing a different one you wore last night.
I wore this ball cap because it was the first one I grabbed.
Okay.
I'm really at that place.
Okay. So, but that's the thing.
I'm happy enough to not give a shit. It is the geezer paradox, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
The geezer paradox is that you get old enough to not give a shit about most things, and certainly not whether or not you're cool, which is the very definition of cool. Yeah. So it's like, I'm either, yeah. So
yeah, I think I'm there's, fine. But yeah, like giving yourself grace and allowing yourself to be whoever the fuck you are, and trimming your sails as needed so you don't go back into the bad behaviors or the old familiar shit that you know is
just
of landmines and whatever else. And, you know, like specifically like with the, I'm not pushing you to do this, but like an example is like the dating thing. Like, you don't want to date, fucking fine. Don't date. Don't.
Right. Yeah.
But allow it. If there comes a moment where you're like, you know, I think I kind of like this chick.
Yeah.
Run with it a little bit.
Well, you know, I'm not going to run with it because it's too expensive unless she's like, hey, yeah, cook for me. And then
there you go, because
and then
it's hot.
I'm in.
That's hot.
But that thing is, I'm like I said.
And you're going to have to go to her house.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend the night, but I'll bring food.
Yeah.
I'm not interested.
And you leave at 3 in the morning.
Well, that says I'm not interested in spending the night. Why? Because I like living by myself. I like my own bed. I like to be able to lay here and just fart my ass off and nobody can say a word. And I don't have to feel bad at all. I can get up multiple times and pee. I can, in the middle of the night, just jerk off. No one cares.
Get up in the middle of the night?
Huh?
Where are you going in the middle of the night to jerk off?
No, I mean, I get up.
Your penis gets up.
Yeah.
And now, War Sack of the News.
In Turn Around Bright Eyes, total solar eclipse is returning to the United States. Somehow it's better than ever before.
I love my astronomy. And in 2017, which ironically, or maybe not, coincidentally, the last time I got laid off from a job was in 2017. So I don't know. At least I've already been laid off.
It's an eclipse thing.
So the eclipse is already... Maybe the eclipse this time around will be like, and now you will get...
Every time I'm going to fall apart.
How is it going to be better than ever? Is it just like, is it going to be coming across the United States? Like, are more people going to be able to see it? Like, what is the reason?
It says this will be the last solar eclipse over the contiguous United States for 21 years.
Wow.
millions of Americans. It's going to be awesome. If you're in the center of the moon shadow known as the totality, the sky will go dark for a few minutes in the middle of the day, and aliens will come down and impregnate you up your ass. No, temperature will drop, stars will appear, birds will become confused, because that's really the best thing about it is a confused bird.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's what they're saying.
Yeah. But it will be the last. It doesn't really say why it's better. It's going to be longer.
Oh, that's
it's going to be twice as long at over 4 minutes.
Oh.
So, all right.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's what they're telling us. So, it's better than ever, I guess.
When is this happening?
April 21st.
Oh, that's upon us.
This next month. Yeah.
Very cool. All right.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
In a different sort of reparations.
Oh, God.
Columbus Drive could become Barack Obama Drive under proposed ordinance.
Yeah. I saw that, and I think it's fine. I'm still annoyed at the whole DuSable Lakeshore Drive thing. Like, they could have named any other street. Should DuSable get a street? Yes. Like, he was a founder of Chicago.
Yeah.
But, like, leave Lakeshore Drive.
There's a song.
Like, there's a song for
fuck's sake. There's a fucking song.
But whatever. Nobody calls it John Baptiste
DuSable. Nobody ever just calls it Lakeshore Drive. It's sort of like the Sears Tower. Who buys it? It's always going to be the Sears Tower.
Well, Harry calls it the Willis Tower.
Then I'm going to have to teach him. I'm going to have to teach him different, because that's good. It's like Comiskey Park. Come on.
Rename Columbus Drive, that's fine. Barack Obama's certainly somebody worthy of getting a street named after him in Chicago. He's from Chicago. Well, Illinois State Senator. President.
This is my
or not Illinois State Senator.
My only problem with it is it's not Christopher Columbus Drive. It's Columbus Drive. So it should not be Barack Obama Drive. It should be Obama Drive. Which Obama Drive sounds like Obamacare and suddenly makes it cooler.
Yeah.
Nobody has
that. Yeah. You
know, it's like
My issue with it, and again, I'd be fine with it. I think he is deserving of a street name. It's just the fucking fanboy standing of Barack Obama that still has bothered me since 2008 or 2007. You know, like,
they'll do a Netflix special on it. Come on,
he will do a Netflix.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, he's just a little like sniffing his own farts to get high.
Well, yeah.
At this point. And
if I'm Barack Obama, well, I don't know.
I'm annoyed that he was given the Nobel Peace Prize and then went on to, you know, amp up the drone. I just, no president's perfect, fine. It just, wait till he's dead. That's what I want to get at. It took me a long time to get there because the traffic on this Obama Drive is,
In when mental illness is a badge of honor. Charted, the kids are not all right. The share of Americans who said they had a major depressive episode in the last year is up by 20% among teens.
They must know my soon-to-be ex-wife. No, David, bad. That's...
I have a mental illness. I took a test online. I did. I did. And I think I've got mild OCD. I'm on the track for bipolar. I do not apparently have PTSD, which that's because as a normal human who's never been in war, I've never had bombs blow up near me. Because that's what PTSD is. Not I was yelled at my boss at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I took a test online, mental health, and it turns out I'm just horny.
See? There you go. There you go. And I wish this had been around in 2014. Six best AI girlfriend chat apps. And some of them, they're rated on most realistic chat, most sexually activated chat, most realistic photography. Like, do they look like a real person?
Talk to them?
Yeah.
Or like video conference?
Some of them are just like her, where it's just the phone call. But some of them are animated, like they look like a real woman talking to you like on Zoom.
Okay, you know what this is? This is the self-checkout of grocery stores. This is taking jobs away from the phone sex workers of the 1990s.
I'm okay with that.
Still looking for work.
That's why I wish this had been around in 2014. Wait a minute. You mean grown men who made children's television were perverts? Sex jokes, massage requests, and humiliation. A timeline of Nickelodeon's dark history.
I watched this docuseries because I watched all those shows.
Yeah.
And I watched them as an adult because he's making a face.
I am making
a face. Because I was interested in writing, developing shows for teens and tweens because, like, that's a market. It's a solid market. My cousin Todd at the time was in that game. And I liked the Dan Schneider stuff.
It was funny.
It was funny. Looking back on it, knowing what we know,
oh, fuck,
it does not hold up.
No, fuck.
It is.
Even if it did, it was not. It's holding up. It's holding up. His dick is not at all. It's holding up. That's terrible. Yes, yeah, it's pretty rough.
It's some fucked up. It's and there's like there's shit that's like, ooh, that's cringy, and then there's stuff that's like, ooh, that's really bad, and then there's stuff
that you go, oh shit,
that no, is,
yeah.
Like the worst, not the worst of humanity, but pretty fucking close.
Pretty low. Like I said, how could anybody be shocked that grown men that want to make shows with tweens is that they're grown men?
But that's like saying, like, you know, grown men that want to teach high school or grown men that want to be.
Have you ever taught high school?
No, because
there's a reason I never taught high school. Let's see. There's a reason I never taught high school. I only taught middle school because when I started teaching, I was 25, and there's no fucking way I'm teaching 18-year-olds at 25.
Yeah,
I knew better. And it's not like, oh, I know I'm a perv. I just know 18-year-olds
don't stand.
I'm, so dude, close I'm not. You know, I'm not. You know thyself.
Yeah,
pervert.
Yeah.
In
Sting warned us.
That's it. In the opinion editorial takeover of the news, two major newspaper chains dropped the AP.
No.
Yep. From the Washington Post, both Gannett and McClatchy say they will have no trouble filling their pages with some news. Some observers warn that the cost-saving move will rob readers of a valuable and reliable source of reporting. They basically, AP is the biggest name among basically the wire services.
Associated Press, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like the most.
And Gannett and McClatchy are two of the largest.
Yeah.
I don't want to say major, creators of newspapers. Publishers of newspapers. And they both have canceled on AP. They will no longer have AP.
I would love to see the numbers on that and how they're going to save money by not going with the AP and going with something else. What, are they going to pay writers to do their own writing now? Like locally? No, of course they're not, because they're modern day newspapers.
I would guess it's going to be AI.
This is fucking, my jaw is.
I'm surprised you hadn't heard this. Yeah. Makes me happy that I picked it for a Rorschach because it's big news.
That's bad.
It's really, really bad. Especially with the possibility, the potential of another Trump presidency. You're fucked. I mean, that is so bad. It's so bad.
Fuck. This makes me not feel good about things anymore. I must have a mental illness now.
Now, and it's Rainey's quote of the week to ponder as you consider life's most pressing choices.
My quote this week.
Yes.
Because we talked about all things, not all things Chicago, but we talked about Chicago. I wanted to give you a quote about Chicago from the late, great Dr. Hunter S. Thompson.
Nice.
This is from his, which one is it? Hang on. This is from a piece he wrote called The Temptations of Jean-Claude Killy. It was published in, where the fuck was it published? Scanlon's Monthly in March of 1970.
Okay.
Sorry, it took so long to get there.
That's all right.
Now, where's the quote, David? Here we go. All right. I had been there before, and I remembered it well. Chicago, This vicious, stinking zoo, this mean, grinning, mace-smelling boneyard of a city, an elegant rock pile monument to everything cruel and stupid and corrupt in the human spirit.
That's a good quote. That's a good quote. It's the one, it reminds me of the one, you know, because that's the thing is when I get divorced, I generally try to eliminate, it's scorched earth piles, I try to eliminate everything that would remind me of them. I only have one thing from Dana. Mm-hmm. And that is our first anniversary thing, and it is a cartoon. It's a limited edition cartoon called Chicago, and it's the stick figure saying, "I hate fucking rats, fucking L, fucking dibs." All the like every panel is
like Chicago thing, yeah.
And at the very end of it is, "I love this fucking city."
Yeah,
and that's exactly how I feel about Chicago.
That's why I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Great.
There are six things you should do this week.
My first thing this week is it's a watch. It is, have you watched it yet?
I don't know.
Roadhouse.
I'm watching it tonight.
On Amazon Prime.
I'm watching it tonight. Is it good?
Yes. Here's the thing. So I started it this morning.
You know how much I fucking love.
I know.
Swayback.
Yes.
Is Russ. Yes. I mean, I'm sorry.
It's hard to watch because.
Is he called Dalton?
Yeah.
Fuck.
But it's fine. The thing that's hard is because Roadhouse is Patrick Swayze. It's so Patrick Swayze, but so it takes like maybe the first half hour. At least for me, I was like, okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right, I
can move on.
I'm just going to ask one spoiler.
Yeah.
We got some titties in it?
I have not seen titties yet.
See, that's my biggest problem.
I'm only like 45 minutes in.
Because the Kelly Lynch titties are just like...
I know.
That's part of what makes that movie.
Who, Pocahontas over there waiting for everyone to notice her?
That's what I'm saying. Telling you. That's
good. It's fun. Yeah. Gyllenhaal plays it kind of... Like, he's like, is he crazy? He might be kind of crazy.
Yeah, right.
Which is fun.
Like Lethal Weapon thing. Yeah.
A little like Lethal Weapon. Yeah, because Swayze played it very cool.
Yeah.
And Gyllenhaal's playing it very cool. But there's a screw that's rattling a little bit.
I love that.
So I kind of want to see what happens.
All right. It's been on my list.
It's a lot of fun. It's really bright because it takes place in the Florida Keys, which is fun.
I'm going to watch it. All right. I like it. Everything on my three things that I'm bringing are things to do in Chicago that I did and that I recommend. The first one is I think you should attend Scott Whitehair's This Much Is True at Mother Murphy's on Lincoln Avenue. I think it's the second Thursday of the month, but you can look it up online. But it's a storytelling show, and I saw like six different storytelling shows in the last 3 weeks. Of those, it was the best. And what I mean by the best is that the stories were all very good. It was very well curated. It's a very comfortable room, and it's free.
There you go.
And everything about that worked for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. There was a woman. It's one of the best. Again, great stories. Woman named Lynn gets up. She's worked for a lot of five-star, you know, like Michelin-star kitchens in Chicago. She starts it by saying, "The following is a story that I'm putting in my book, Memoirs of a Possible Serial Killer."
Okay.
And it's really just about how far the restaurant industry can push somebody to lose their mind. And the story itself was fucking hysterical. But knowing the veneer of the whole, she just framed it well. It was a really good thing. She said, "Everything I'm telling you is true, except for the things that by law I cannot." It was like really fun. His show's really good. This Much Is True at Mother Murphy's.
My next thing to do is also a Chicago-based thing. Nelson Algren's book, City on the Make.
What about it?
That's his book, right?
Yeah.
I've read it several times. Why am I blanking on this? Read that.
Yeah.
Like, that's just like...
Well, read any Nelson Algren, but yeah.
But that's like a good...
Yeah.
It's like a horror with
a beautiful woman with a broken nose kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, all right.
There's that.
All right, my second thing is, it's not my favorite pizza, but it's the first pizza place I ate here since coming back, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Coal Fire on Southport, just down the street from mm-hmm. the Music Box. But it's their thin crust. It's really good pizza. Their ingredients are very fresh, and they got good beer. And it's still more expensive than I want it to be, but it's still pretty good pizza. So
yeah.
I recommend Coal Fire. It is wood-fired pizza, like a baseball's throw away from the Music Box Theater, yeah. which would be a combination. Go to Coal Fire, and they see some vintage fucking film on 70 millimeter like we did.
You saw The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
And it was fucking awesome.
The only negative thing I have to say about the experience
yes.
is I woke up this morning.
Oh, your ass hurt.
It wasn't my ass. It was like my neck shoulder.
Oh, yeah. No shit. Those seats are the worst.
So fucking ugly.
Those seats are the worst goddamn seats in all seatdom.
God.
And I feel like I was sitting in Mount Vernon, where everybody was like a good foot and a half shorter than we are now.
Yeah.
And all the furniture was built for tiny people.
Yes.
We're sitting in these chairs. Yeah. About a third of the way. No, not even. About a third halfway, because it's a long fucking movie.
Yeah. It's solid 3 hours.
It's like solid 3 hours. About halfway through. I don't know if you, because I was sitting right next to you, that I kept having to shift because my fucking ass was not happy.
With me. Yeah.
I was very unhappy. I was like, God damn it. I'm going to move here. I got to stretch my legs this way. Oh, yeah. My ass was killing me.
Yeah.
But yes, that's Coal Fire on Southport, and go see a movie at the Music Box.
My third thing to do this week is a listen. There's a person they've got a band. Their name is Rosie Tucker.
The band or the person?
The person's name is Rosie Tucker.
Okay. So she's the lead. She's like the lead singer.
They are the lead singer.
I beg your pardon?
According to their Spotify and their Wikipedia page, their pronouns are they, them. I'm trying to be respectful. But they look like...
So the band is they?
Because the band would make sense. It's like...
how many people are in the band?
I've seen some live performances. There were three.
Yeah, so they. That fits, yeah. Okay. I got it.
This band, Jesus fucking Christ. This
is the band, that makes sense. It totally makes sense. Really easy.
They've got a bunch of albums. They're all great, but there's a new one out that came out this week, March 22nd, called Utopia Now, and it's fucking great.
All right.
It is such a fun, great record.
What kind of music would you describe? What genre?
Because
I have a new genre that I've now defined.
I would say like indie dream rock.
Indie dream rock, I like that.
Some of the stuff is a little dreamy.
The stuff I've been listening to of late is what I call angry tattooed chick rock.
Yeah, it's not Riot Girl.
Okay, good. All right,
I think it's adjacent. Like,
okay, right. But dream, I like the dream rock. All right, I'll try.
Yeah,
it. I'll get
it. They'll be in Chicago on May 2nd.
Rosie, what?
Rosie Tucker. And they're playing the Beat Kitchen,
which kind of sounds like a euphemism for a penis. My third thing is an eat.
An eat?
Yes, an eat.
An eat, that breakfast you made for
me. It's another one, I went and had dinner with Ada Chang here in Chicago, and she said, have you ever had hot pot? And I had never had hot pot. And so we went on Clark. It's a just opened Happy Lamb hot pot on Clark and Diversey. I wasn't scared because I'm trying, somebody that's wanting to cook. I want to try new cuisines. But she said, do you trust me? Have you ever eaten here? I said, no. And I told you I'd never eaten here before. We have to all you can eat. Well, all you can eat was fucking pricier and shit. It was $50 a piece. So, and I wasn't that hungry. It turns out I ate a lot, but I don't know if you've ever eaten one of these things, but it was cool because they've got like the heating element in the table. Mm-hmm. And then they've got like a 6-inch deep pan filled with liquid, and one half it's separated by melting. One half is sort of like it's bone broth. It's consomme, but it's like a bone broth that's mild, and then they have the spicy bone broth.
Yep.
And then they turn it on, and it starts to bubble, right? And then they bring you vegetables and meats, and don't tell my sister, octopus. She watched that octopus documentary on Netflix, and now the idea that I would eat an octopus would probably make her mad. Yeah. Everything. Fish balls, which are not the balls of fish.
It's
balls. I know. It's balls made of fish. But I didn't know that. So it's like, but it was...
You didn't know fish don't have balls?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
But it was delicious. I did know.
Okay.
It's delicious. Not really. Yeah. It's delicious. It's fun.
Yeah, hot pot is great. I did a hot pot in Detroit a couple years ago.
I'm gonna say and it's one of those things where
it's fondue, but
yeah, it's like fondue. Yeah. It's but what and it's different than Korean barbecue.
Yeah.
But got good flavors. But what I recognize with Ada and I, this is one where you need like 4 to 6 people sitting around these big ass tables doing that. Cause it, like I said, we ended up just having a wonderful conversation. I did discover that the storytelling scene is exactly as bullshitty as it was when I left. You know, just hearing her talk about it. I was like, yeah, it's the same petty squabbles, same players, all same bullshit. Oh, you mean Nestor's making up most of his stories? Well, what a shock. What a surprise to me. Again, if you ever want to know the story why I left the Moth, that is a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But is my saying this is not cool and them saying, no, we have to have these people on the stage. But again, very, it's like, all right. But it was fun talking to Ada. She's funny as hell, has a lot of great insights. We talked, of course, about you. We talked about me. We talked about her, talked about the scene, and just ate this delicious fucking stuff. So if you're in Chicago, go to Happy Lamb Hot Pot. Be prepared to spend about $50 for one, but it's totally fucking worth it.
Yeah.
And that is the show.
That's the show.
Bye.
You can listen to the Literate ApeCast on literateape.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you go to get that delicious podcast experience. If you enjoy the dulcet sounds of two white guys babbling about whatever comes into their stunted brains, leave us a review anywhere that, reviews are left, and share it with someone whom which you have a dubious relationship.
For information about Literate Ape, go to literateape.com, of course, and check out the rest of our podcasts and our years of scribbling. Music on the ApeCast is courtesy of Mike Finopel and Localmotive. You can find them all over Chicago and online at localmotiveband.com.
The fuck?